I had to pee, I was thirsty, but it said stay, and I was not moving. Suddenly, three small female greys entered the room. These things were short, Pat says. They looked almost like Mongoloid children. They were short, a light grey color, and stickily built. They didn't have any hair. To Pat's displeasure, they came over and sat down right next to her. Do you know how rude that is? She told them angrily. This whole place is empty. Of all the places where you could sit, you had to sit here? I'm already scared of you people. There are other spots. This is my spot. The Greys seemed to be amused and told her. But you're sitting in our spots. At this time each day, this is our spot. You are in our spot, we are not in yours. Pat didn't continue to argue. We have something to do, the Greys said. The beings told her that they were working on communications on the craft, led her over to a computer screen kind of thing. Look at it, they told her. Pat looked at the screen. Although the Greys didn't speak, she somehow knew exactly what they were doing. I felt like they were recording everything that I ever looked at, said, thought or anything else that was in my brain. I felt like they took every thought, every experience, everything I have ever experienced on this planet, out of my brain. It's like they made a carbon copy, a backup disk. I felt emptied. I'm sure they could spit out another me somewhere if they wanted to. They never explain anything. They're about taking care of business, whatever their business is. The entire experience, as far as Pat can remember, lasted only a few moments. Says Pat, they stayed for a short time, and then they left. She doesn't remember anything after that, except for waking up the next morning. It was to be her last encounter. She jokes that since the ETs now have a complete copy, they no longer need the original. Pat continues to have psychic experiences. One night in 2009, she had a dream that she was talking with her childhood friend Mike, only now he was all grown up. He was sitting along the edge of a spring, and there was blood on his leg. He told me that he had gotten married and had a baby, and he told me that he had drowned, and he wanted me to tell his wife that he was sorry to leave her by herself to raise the kid. Pat called up her brother and asked about Mike, and was he okay? No, her brother said. I was at Blue Springs with him yesterday, and he drowned. Dealing with her encounters has had its challenges. Now that it appears to be over, Pat looks back on her experiences with restrained emotion. I make it like this is a little thing in my life, she says, but it's not a little thing. It's just best to deal with it like it's a little thing. Chapter 3. The experiment. It was 1953, and Ramon, pseudonym, was 6 years old. He lived in a government housing project called Bazalone Homes, located at the base of Hanson Dam in San Fernando, Southern California. It was a fairly rural location, not far from Tujunga Canyon, which would soon earn a reputation as a UFO hotspot. It was a close-knit community of military families, and people often helped each other move in and out of the various homes. One day, Ramon and his family were helping a neighbor lady move. They had worked for a while and it had just gotten dark. While packing boxes, Ramon found an unusual-looking flashlight, a penlight, but of industrial manufacture. The neighbor saw Ramon admiring it and said, "Would you like to have it?" "Yes," Ramon replied excitedly, and he ran upstairs to play with it by shining it outside the window. He aimed it toward Hanson Dam about 150 feet away, and clicked the light on and off twice. To Ramon's surprise, a mysterious bright light appeared on the top edge of the dam and blinked twice. Ramon quickly responded by flashing the pen light three times. The light answered by flashing three times. Ramon then flashed twice, and the light flashed twice in return. At that moment, his mother walked by. "Don't do that," she said. "You're going to make that plane crash." Ramon was confused. It obviously wasn't a plane. Somebody, or something, was resting directly on the top of the dam. "I wondered how an airplane could be on the dam itself," Ramon says. Ramon stopped flashing his light at the object. The next day, he went outside to play with his two brothers and two cousins. It was midday. Ramon was the first to see a strange shiny, silver disc hovering nearby. On Foothill Boulevard, There's a small rolling hill, Ramon says, and I noticed a disc just hovering there. I looked at it, and it would just oscillate back and forth. So, I brought it to the attention of my brothers and cousins. The object moved from the hill, over a service drive leading to the housing division, where it hovered in place, just above treetop level. It was totally silent. The five boys jumped up and down and began waving at it. There were portholes going all around the disc. It kind of tilted downward, Ramon says, and I could see like a railing at the midsection inside it. There were these people, but their arms were longer than regular arms. And they waved back at us. The three figures, each of them wearing what appeared to be dark uniforms, stood inside the craft, looking down at the children. The disc then moved forward to the far side of the dam, right at the base where there was a playground. It moved lower and lower in a falling leaf motion. It went over the swing, over the slides, and came to rest at the base of the dam. The children hopped on their bikes, rode over and approached the landed craft. It lay on the ground, tilted at a 45-degree angle. We went up to this thing, Ramon says, and we just stood there in awe and just looked at it. Realizing it was unusual, all the kids became frightened and ran away. Ramon, however, felt no fear. Instead, he was intensely curious. What was this thing? He walked around it to where the low edge of the tilted saucer touched the gravel on the ground. I placed my knee on top of it, and I started to crawl around the circumference of this thing. I crawled all the way around it, on top of it, like a kid on the monkey bars, just crawl around it. Then I smelled something, like a very pungent battery acid type smell. I went from the low part up to the highest point, and then I started back to the other side, coming downward. Then I noticed there was a hole. It was a small opening, only a few feet wide, but easily big enough for Ramon to enter. I looked inside it, he says, kind of stuck my head inside there and glanced to the right. It was dark, but what caught my attention were these beautiful lights, magenta, pink, gold, red, and they were pulsating. And it just drew me in there. I started crawling inside. There was this grating, like on sidewalks, and when I walked on the grating, I went downward and I was just inside this thing. I went down inside this thing. I fell downward. I remember being taken to a room with lights that seemed to be almost alive. It was almost like the craft was breathing as the lights were blinking. And the next thing I remember, I came out of it. I got out of it somehow, and I started walking back to the housing unit. It was a few hours later, maybe around 5 p.m., and Ramon's brothers and cousins were engrossed in a game of hide and seek. Ramon was disoriented. Walking back into his home in a daze, he saw a girl sitting in the room. His mother was combing her hair. "Who is she?" Ramon asked. "Oh, she has a pretty dress, doesn't she?" his mother said. "Do you like her dress?" Ramon didn't recognize her. He kept seeing images of Chinese-looking eyes. "Who is she?" he asked. "Is she Chinese too?" "What are you talking about?" his mother asked. "Chinese? Don't you know your own sister?" Ramon was still trying to orient himself and figure out what was happening when his mother sent him back to his room. While the encounter with the UFO was amazing enough, in just a few seconds, he would have one of the most unusual experiences of his life. I went to my room, and I closed the door. I had this real comfortable red patch sofa and I sat down upon it. And I don't know how this happened, but I began to levitate inside the apartment. I went straight up and I started to touch the light fixtures. I touched the curtains, the curtain rods, the light fixtures. I used my hands to walk across the ceiling. And then I went right back to the top of the sofa, and I went straight down. He had just flown. Levitated. Ramon was incredibly excited. He ran from his room and told his mother, "Mom, I just flew." "You have to have plane tickets to fly," she said. "What are you talking about? Get out of here. You're talking crazy today." His mother ordered him to go back outside and play with the neighborhood kids. He went outside, and found himself in an ongoing game of hide and seek. Whoever's turn it was had to stand next to the old tower by the telephone pole and count to 100 before beginning to search. So, I started counting backward from 100, Ramon says, and I got down to about 70 and I went into a stupor. I just fell asleep right there. The next thing I knew, I'm on top of the roof of the housing units, and I'm able to hear the children wherever they are, like underneath the car, behind the bushes, or wherever. And the next thing I knew, I'm standing right in front of them. And I brought them back to the tire. Then I started walking away, and this thing repeated itself. I went back to the top of the roof. How I got there, I don't know. I just levitated right back up on top of there, and I could hear the children, and I went to the next group. They became frightened. How did you do that? They asked. How did this happen? Ramon had no explanation to give them. He didn't understand it himself, it just happened. The game broke up, Ramon says. They became frightened. By this point, the sun set and it was dusk. It was a warm evening, and Ramon and the other children remained outside to play. Ramon's parents left to make a quick shopping trip at the local market. Ramon and the other kids were watching a man who was tossing a baseball up and down, high in the air and then catching it with his glove. Ramon was amazed at how high the man was tossing the ball and asked him, "How high can you throw the ball?" "To the moon, kid," he replied. "To the moon." The man tossed the ball again. At this point, something strange happened. The ball soared up and seemed to come down in slow motion. At the same time, Ramon became distracted by something else. An orb of light about the size of a basketball appeared out of nowhere and began to circle the entire housing tract. Then suddenly it dropped down, or expanded in size. It now hovered over the housing tract, and appeared to be a few hundred feet overhead, just above the rooftops. Beautiful colored lights, pink, magenta, gold, blinked around the circumference. Everyone outside stopped what they were doing and stared in awe. "What is it?" several women asked. "Is it an airplane?" "A helicopter?" "No," someone else said. It suddenly became clear that they were seeing something very unusual. The crowd of adults and children began to panic. The adults rushed around and gathered the children, ushering them inside. Ramon and his brothers and cousins clustered together in the house. One of them began crying in fear. Ramon, however, was reminded of what he had seen only hours earlier. The lights were exactly the same as he had seen inside the craft. "I could still see the lights through the kitchen windows," Ramon says. "So, I went up to the window, pulled the curtains back, and I glanced up to the bottom of the craft. It tilted downward and you could see the portholes again. Then, show. It shoots up and just takes off." Shortly after the incident, Ramon's parents showed up to find everybody talking about what they had seen. His parents hadn't seen anything, and were amazed by everyone's accounts. Finally, everything seemed to settle down and Ramon went to bed. But his adventure wasn't over yet. Sometime in the middle of the night, Ramon woke up to find himself floating off his bed, levitating in the air. "I began to levitate off the bed in prone position, with my face looking up toward the ceiling," he says. "I tried to call out for help, but I was totally paralyzed. I could only open and close my eyes. And I thought, what the heck is going on? And then I started going toward the hallway. I'm in a prone position and just gliding in the air, and I go right to the door. And I thought, oh, my God, I'm going to hit the door. And boom, I go right through the door. How that happens, I don't know, but the next thing I know, this craft is once again resting over there by the playground area at the base of the dam. And I go back inside. I remember them putting me in a chair and they strap me in. These guys just walked up to me and put me in the chair." Ramon was confused and frightened. The figures were short and had dark wrap-around eyes that looked almost Asian. Although they weren't hurting him, Ramon felt out of control and knew that he was in a bad situation. The chair was like a dentist's chair. Directly in front of him was a wide porthole. "I could see outside," Ramon says. "Then this thing takes off, and I could see these stars passing us, like thousands of stars just went show, show, show." As the craft maneuvered, the chair changed position slightly, and Ramon heard a sound like compressed air. He watched as the stars swept by the porthole, stopped, and then moved again. This happened several times until suddenly Ramon saw that they had dropped down out of space and were now flying over the San Fernando Valley and were approaching the Hansen Dam. The craft landed at the base of the dam again. At this point, Ramon passed out. The next thing he knew, it was morning and he was back in bed. He didn't know what to make of the experience, but was certain he hadn't imagined or dreamed it. The entire day was still vivid in his mind, from the point when he and the other kids saw the craft the first time, going inside, coming back out hours later, flying in his room, levitating during hide and seek, the second sighting only a few minutes later, and then the abduction. He remembered it all clearly. But it was so strange, he didn't quite understand what was happening. Then, a few nights later, it happened again. Ramon woke in the middle of the night to find himself floating out of his bed, out through the closed door, and back to the base of the dam where the craft once again waited for him. It was an exact replay of his first abduction, being placed in a strange chair, and looking out a portal at the moving stars. The next morning, he woke up to find himself back in bed. That evening, when he went to bed, he told his mom that something weird was happening to him. He said that he was flying around at night and being pulled from the house. She thought at first that he was kidding, but Ramon insisted he was telling the truth. Something was pulling him from his bed. To placate him, Ramon's mother took an old bedsheet, tore it into strips, and tied Ramon's arm to his little brother's, and then she tied his other arm to the bedposts. This didn't stop the abduction. Ramon once again found himself flying out of the house and back into the craft. Inside, he was taken to a rounded room lit with blue light. A table came out of the wall. It had no feet, no legs, it just came out of the wall. I remember being on a table. There was a frosted panel inside this craft. I saw these guys come around it and up to me. They looked like grays, but they were pinkish beige, and their skin felt plastic. I could feel their hands touching my legs, touching my head. I do remember being physically examined, Ramon says, and they checked every orifice in me. At one point during the examination, Ramon felt an extreme amount of pain. Their eyes were like a big hornet bee, Ramon says, kind of blackish brown, almost a fluid color. When he woke up the next morning, Ramon's mother found him tied back to the bedposts, but underneath the bed. She accused her sons of playing a trick on her. But Ramon denied it, and his brother had no memory of how Ramon came to be underneath the bed. Ramon's body still felt sore from the painful examination. Another consequence of the abductions was a persistent tinnitus-like ringing in Ramon's ears. It's a high-pitched noise, Ramon says, a high-pitched humming that's metallic in nature. It sounds like a machine, like a drone. About a week after the abductions, Ramon was inside his home when he felt himself falling into a strange stupor or trance. It was mid-afternoon, and normally he would go outside and play. Now, he could feel his consciousness slipping away. My head just went backward, he said, and he was out. What seemed like moments later, he came out of the trance to find himself standing on the roof of the building. There was a small crowd of people below him saying, "Don't move. Stand still." A fire truck arrived. They sent up a ladder, and quickly carried him down from the roof. Nobody asked Ramon how he got up there. Instead, the fire chief approached his parents and asked, "How did your son get up there?" The chief explained that the only access to the roof was locked, and that it was impossible for Ramon to be up there. His parents had no explanation. Shortly after all the strange experiences, Ramon told his cousins what happened. To his amazement, they said the same thing happened to them. "They've had these things happen to them," Ramon says. They said that they felt like they were floating over their bed and then dropped on the bed a number of times. "My cousin told me that when it happens to them, they float over and just drop, and they wake up when they're hitting the bed." Not long after this, Ramon and his family moved from the housing project into a new apartment in the San Fernando Valley. Soon more strange things happened. The TV went on and off by itself. At night, a powerful blue light illuminated the interior of the apartment, but when they tried to find the source, it blinked off. When he was 11 years old, Ramon went to stay with his grandparents in a small community outside of Fresno, California. During summer months, Ramon often stayed with them so he could help do farm labor and earn some extra money. He wasn't there long before he was abducted again. "I was lying in bed," Ramon says, "and I literally floated off the bed, went through the back screen door, over a little fence and across a field where the train station was. And there was a craft there. It landed there." Ramon's memory ends as he was taken inside the craft. When he woke up the next morning, he immediately recalled the incident. It had been a cool night, and he remembered the coldness of the air as he was floated to the craft. Following that abduction, the same thing happened three more times. It was always the same. He would wake up to find himself being floated out of the house to a landed UFO, always in the same place. One day he was talking with a neighbor. He pointed to the field where the UFO had landed and said that he once saw a strange light there. The neighbor said, "Yeah, that light comes down in the morning and it lands. It comes down around 3 o'clock or 4 o'clock in the morning and lands in the field." Ramon was amazed. "He saw this thing in the field. And I was floating out of my grandparents' house and going into it." Following these events, Ramon's grandmother decided to share some special knowledge with him. Ramon's grandmother was a deeply spiritual woman, steeped in traditional Hispanic folklore. She was also very psychic. Ramon remembers that one evening his grandmother started making a huge meal. It was just Ramon and his grandparents there. His grandfather said, "Old lady, what are you doing?" "They're coming," his grandmother replied enigmatically. "Who's coming?" "They'll be here," she replied. On that evening, they had unexpected guests come to visit. This sort of thing happened frequently. It was as if his grandmother had a sixth sense about things. It was shortly after the abductions had occurred that Ramon's grandmother took him out for an afternoon walk into the fields around their house. He wonders now if she knew something about what was happening to him. Speaking Spanish, she told him that if ever he wanted a cool breeze on a hot summer day, all he had to do was utter the words, "Bazda, bazda, bazda," and the wind would come. She demonstrated and spoke the words. To Ramon's amazement, a cool breeze swept over them. "How did you make that happen?" he asked. "How do you know these things about nature?" "Put your knee on the ground," she said, "and look out into the field. Watch what is going to happen." Ramon could hardly believe his eyes. "I looked out in the cotton field, and I saw a flotilla of little round UFOs come and land in the field." Ramon was amazed. The objects were glowing white and spherical, each about the size of a small car. They floated down like dandelions and landed in the field about 200 feet away. "They just came down there in the field and landed," Ramon says. Ramon's grandmother remained very serious. He had the sense that she was passing sacred knowledge from generation to generation. She told him that whenever anything evil approaches him, such as the owl, tell it to go back into hell and burn in the pit. Ramon wondered if she knew about the Greys, and about what was happening to him. Other strange things happened on these summer visits to his grandmother's house. There was a rope swing near the house he loved to play with. It was tied under a big oak tree next to a small canal. If you swung hard enough, you could swing right over the canal. To get there, however, you had to navigate a narrow cement ledge alongside the canal. In 1961, around age 14, Ramon was playing on the rope swing when he saw a black limousine-type car driving along the ledge. It parked and watched him for a few moments before zooming away. Only much later did Ramon realize how strange the event was. There was no way a car could have been there. The ledge was only a few feet wide. With no idea how to explain what he saw, he just filed it in the back of his mind. Years later, he heard about men in black and black limousines and connected it to his other strange experiences. From a very young age, Ramon had always felt a strange uneasiness, a feeling of waiting for something to happen, but he had no idea what. As he became a teenager, the feeling grew stronger, but still remained undefined. He felt like he had been programmed, or was being watched and followed, like he was part of some sort of plan. Something. The ringing in his ears was still a problem. He went to the doctor, but the doctor was unable to find anything wrong. Meanwhile, as he grew up, many of his friends were having trouble getting involved in drugs, gangs and bad behavior. Ramon didn't want to end up in jail, and he felt like he needed to do something to protect himself, to give his life direction. But what? At age 17, Ramon spent the summer with his grandparents. He decided to sleep outside on an old army cot beneath the oak tree in the backyard. Inside the house were his grandparents, aunts and cousins, and his brother. Suddenly he saw a glowing object float down out of the sky and land next to their garden where they grew corn, tomatoes, cucumbers and other vegetables. Grace exited the craft and began taking soil samples. At this point, Ramon blacked out and forgot about the experience. Shortly after the above incident, he spontaneously decided to join the Marines. His parents were supportive of his decision. Although he was still a minor and hadn't finished high school, his parents signed a waiver that allowed him to join. Ramon's father, who was in World War II, had only one piece of advice: don't volunteer for anything. Ramon promised he wouldn't. The next thing he knew, Ramon found himself sent off to Marine boot camp. It was now 1964. Ramon went through a 30-day boot camp, and after the training, he was assigned to office administration at Camp Pendleton down in the San Diego area. Although he hadn't even completed high school, he was put through IBM training and told that he was assigned to headquarters and service. An officer told him, "You're going to need a crypto clearance in case something comes over your desk." Ramon was amazed. He was just a kid, and now he had a secret clearance. One thought kept running through his mind: what the hell is going on? One day shortly after arrival, Ramon sat at his desk when he heard two officers talking right outside his door. To his shock, they started to discuss a UFO in the military's possession, being held in a hangar and guarded by officers with M60 machine guns. They talked about seeing strange blue lights. "I overhear these guys talking about this particular craft in a jet hangar at a certain location," Ramon says. "I'm the new guy here, and he's a corporal, so I'm not going to get in the middle." And then they walk away. Ramon was stunned. His first thought was that he was not supposed to have heard the conversation. But the men outside his office must have known that he could hear them. It didn't make sense. A short time later, Ramon and a small group of other young privates were called in to have a meeting with a Marine Corps sergeant. Says Ramon, he comes up, and he starts giving us this big long spiel, saying if we would like to participate in this particular thing for the betterment of your country. And we would like to know if you would be willing to participate in this. And I'm not about to volunteer for anything. I'm not going to break the rules my father gave me. So, the next thing I know, I don't know how this happened, but I find myself on this Navy bus with about 11 other Marines. Ramon was disoriented and confused. What was he doing on this bus? He would never have agreed to this. The last thing he remembered was being given the spiel from a sergeant, and now this? "I'm inside this green Navy transport bus," Ramon says, "and the windows are painted black, and then you have black curtains over the black painted windows. You can't see in. You're not supposed to see out. We are inside and there are about 11 of us and the bus driver. And it's very odd." Everyone in the bus was in a stupor, stone-faced, looking straight ahead, almost like drugged out. We all had our green fatigues on. So, I let my eyes glance, and I took a chance and I looked back. I thought, "God dang, everyone's stone-faced. What the heck is going on?" I looked forward to the bus driver, and we're going from checkpoint, to checkpoint, to checkpoint. Ramon was able to see out the front of the bus. Each checkpoint involved stopping at a military roadblock while the bus driver communicated with the officer in the guard shack, trying to convince him to allow them through. The problem was, the checkpoints were never ending and it became increasingly difficult to convince the guards to let them through. The bus driver becomes very agitated, Ramon says. "We're going through checkpoint after checkpoint. After the sixth checkpoint, this Navy driver is getting agitated and he's screaming at the guard. 'Where's the final location?' the guard asked. 'I've got these guys here,' the driver shouted. 'This is where I'm supposed to take them.' It was clear to Ramon that they were in an extremely sensitive and well-guarded military base, and that the bus driver was losing his patience. "He's arguing," Ramon says,